Welcome once again to our program, The Intelligent Design and Biological Evolution Debate, that's been going on in our country, particularly perhaps for the last 10 years, particularly concerning what could or couldn't be taught in public school classes in science. So we've been talking about intelligent design, and we're up to what's the relationship between the creationists and intelligent design campaign. Ron, who was our visitor, I forgot to introduce you, who is our regular participant on the panel, who is the teacher at John Paul II Catholic High, Religion, History, and Government. I'm your host, Monsignor Larry Moran, Pastor Emeritus, St. Patrick Catholic Church at 19th and Poplar. So, Ron, could you give us an idea about the campaign, the effort of the creationist and intelligent design people to try to do something about the atheism that seems to exist very much in public school science classes?
Yeah, what they're trying to do is to force the educational establishment to include a supernaturalistic view of creation in the nation's schools. And there has been a shift of strategy in the anti-evolution campaign or movement from teaching creation science to teaching intelligent design. Remember, we've already talked about those two. We've already talked about creation science and what it is, and how the Aguilar case, how it was in 1987, how it was outlawed, you know.
Someone wanted to teach creation, yes, as it's described in the book of Genesis and the Bible.
And then how intelligent design comes in and sort of picks up the pieces and tries to carry on. To teaching the controversy, to teaching a theory in crisis, to teaching critical analysis of evolution. These are five different
stages
in this whole process of trying to, in a campaign, of trying to force the school system, the public school system, to include intelligent design explanations for the formation of life and this, that, and the other in the public schools.
At least as an option,
at least as an option.
Okay.
Every time that one strategy fails, anti-evolution advocates formulate a new strategy to get around the roadblock.
All right. Now, that sounds a little complicated. Can you kind of sort that out for us?
I'll try. I understand that the intelligent design movement grew out of the creationist tradition that attacks evolutionary theory mainly from an evangelical and fundamentalist Christian point of view. The movement was greatly stimulated, as I just said a while ago, by the 1987 U.S. Supreme Court decision, Edwards versus Aguilar, which prohibits the teaching of creationism in public school science classrooms. When their efforts failed to get creationism in the public schools, proponents repositioned themselves by changing their strategy to promoting intelligent design instead. Although proponents of intelligent design often claim that they are only arguing for the existence of a designer who may or may not be God, opponents claim that all of the leading advocates do believe that the designer is the Christian God and frequently mix their allegedly scientific arguments with discussions of religious issues, especially when they address religious groups. They say that proponents downplay the religious aspects of their agenda when they address other audiences, that is, other than friendly Christian audiences. They claim that intelligent design is nothing more than creationism in disguise. It's my understanding that the intelligent design campaign or movement in this country was primarily led by the Discovery Institute and its Center for Science and Culture of Seattle, Washington, to, quote, promote a religious agenda calling for a broad social, academic, and political changes employing intelligent design arguments in the public sphere, end of quote. That's sort of from a policy statement of theirs.
Okay.
The Institute's strategy has been for the Institute itself or groups acting on its behalf to lobby state and local boards of education and local, state, and federal policymakers to enact policies and or laws which often take the form of textbook disclaimers and the language of state science standards that undermine or remove evolutionary theory from the public school science classrooms by portraying it as controversial or as a theory in crisis. Opponents claim in contrast, that is, opponents to ID, claim in contrast that the truth of the matter is the overwhelming consensus of the scientific community is that there is no controversy among scientists. In other words, IDers are saying that there's a controversy among scientists about the theory of evolution, and the evolutionary scientists are saying, no, there isn't any controversy. We're all basically in agreement. We just disagree over maybe details, technical details for the most part. They say that evolution is one of the best supported theories in all of science, and that whatever controversy does exist is political and religious, not scientific. It's true that the leaders of the movement, such as Philip Johnson, who some consider to be the founder, the founding father of intelligent design in this country, Michael Behe, William A. Dembski, and Jonathan Wells and Stephen Meyer, those are some of the stars of the ID movement. They are trying to expose, quote, the limitations of scientific orthodoxy and of the secular philosophy of naturalism, end of quote. Intelligent design proponents allege that it isn't correct to limit science to a naturalistic philosophy and to exclude any supernatural explanation of the creation and operation of the universe. That is, to exclude, you know, from classroom discussions.
Which it obviously is at present.
Which it obviously is, yes. The overall goal of the movement is to counter, this is the ID movement now, the overall goal of the movement is to counter the materialist worldview represented by the theory of evolution in favor of a, quote, a science consonant with Christian and theistic convictions, end of quote. Opponents of ID claim that the proponents purposely confuse its agenda as a matter of policy, and that is that its activities betray an aggressive, systematic agenda for promoting not only intelligent design creationism, but the religious worldview that undergirds it, in other words, Christianity. And this strategy has been named the wedge strategy.
The wedge driving in.
Yes.
Okay. Would the, as you understand it, would the intelligent design people say, if we teach both, trying to balance the fact that there is controversy, would they be agreeable to that? Of course, probably school wouldn't at the present time, but...
No, they don't want the... They say there is no controversy, so they would be... Those who are for teaching evolution in the public schools will say there is no controversy amongst the scientists, so therefore there's no controversy to teach, so they would certainly completely reject the idea of including any kind of discussion in a ninth grade biology classroom about the controversy that they say is non-existent, that is, the evolutionary scientists say is non-existent.
Okay. Would, on the other hand, the intelligent design people say we would feel that would be fairness, time for both?
They would say yes, that it's fair if we get to present our particular point of view, which we think has a lot of scientific support.
Okay, very good. Tell me more about the wedge strategy.
This strategy includes a public relations campaign to promote, quote, this is from one of their documents, teaching the controversy in the media, charitable organizations, and the scientific community. This whole strategy is designed to sway public opinion in order to cause the, quote, overthrow of materialism and its cultural legacies, end of quote. The proponents of the wedge strategy, such as Philip Johnson, who I mentioned a while ago, and many considered to be the father of the intelligent design movement in this country, hope to reinstate a, quote, broadly theistic understanding of nature to replace materialism.
Materialism basically says we can explain everything in the universe without God.
Well, yes, that's correct. It's a strictly everything. Nothing exists beyond material reality. That is reality. There's nothing beyond of a spiritual or a supernatural nature.
Okay.
Johnson uses the wood-splitting wedge analogy, that's why they call it the wedge strategy, to illustrate his goal of splitting apart the concepts of science and naturalism. Because he thinks, of course, and I think he's right, the way science is being taught in the public schools basically is a naturalistic explanation. In other words, there is no, that nature, looking at things strictly from a natural point of view, that everything about it can be explained.
Without any reference to a higher being.
Yes, without any reference to a higher being. And of course, naturalism, it is a philosophy or ideology that all reality comes under the laws of nature, that everything has a purely natural explanation. What the proponents of the wedge strategy are advocating is, of course, supernaturalism. But so as not to alarm their opponents, they usually avoid using the term, instead using terms like non-natural or, well, usually something like that.
Okay.
Intelligent design critics claim that this is simply a semantic subterfuge designed to enable proponents to get around the First Amendment prohibition against religion in the public schools. They further argue or claim that the wedge strategy, quoting from one of their documents, betrays the intelligent design's political rather than scientific purpose, end of quote.
Okay. As a strategy.
Let me interject the point. So the whole idea of the wedge strategy is to split Philip Johnson's idea of splitting the concepts of science and naturalism, which they felt had been kind of joined together at the hip in the public school system.
And that it's not fair to do that.
It's not fair to do that.
Because we're getting into philosophical reasoning.
Yes, if you get into any kind of materialistic or any kind of naturalistic explanation, that's not science. That's philosophy.
That's asking questions: where do things come from? Where
yes.
are we going? The answer to the big questions of life.
Yes.
Okay. Well, as a strategy, don't the advocates of intelligent design, or ID as you call it, short form, portray evolution as a theory in crisis?
Yes, that's come up several times, you know, in our discussion. And their strategy is to get a hearing for their cause, has been to portray evolution as a theory in crisis, which means that scientists themselves are criticizing evolution, and that fairness and equal time requires that students should be educated about the alleged scientific controversy. Intelligent design proponents, they call this strategy teach the controversy. On the other hand, opponents maintain that there is no disagreement among scientists and that they are in basic agreement on the truth of the theory. They just differ over technical matters and not mechanisms of change and things like that, rather than the overall theory.
Okay,
itself.
So they just really, do they disregard the intelligent design scientists as not being good scientists, or not being capable of making scientific decisions about matters, and that they just say, well, we're in the greater majority the evolutionists, and there isn't really any controversy, even among good scientists.
Yes, I think they would just simply say that we agree amongst ourselves, basically, and that ID is simply a pseudoscience. It's a false science. It doesn't have the features or use the methodology that we use. So therefore, it's not science, and if it's not science, it shouldn't be taught in a
science
classroom.
Okay. Can you tell us any more about the teach the controversy strategy?
My understanding is the term teach the controversy was coined by a professor of English and education at the University of Illinois in Chicago named Gerald Graff. He taught that established knowledge should not be taught as a subtle matter, but instead be considered in a, quote, crucible of debate and controversy. And Graff meant by teaching a controversy that established concepts should include teaching the debates and conflicts by which they were established. And I don't think that the evolutionary biologist and other scientists would object too much to the idea of teaching the controversy in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
Where you're actually looking at genuine debates and conflicts that really did occur between scientists. And there are lots of them, of course, in the scientific area. Philip E. Johnson, though, who was program advisor to the Discovery Institute, is considered, as I said a while ago, the father of the intelligent design movement. He later appropriated the idea for the intelligent design cause. And to quote him, quote, "to cast doubt upon the very concept of established knowledge," end of quote. So he proposed that the conflicting points of view regarding the teaching of evolution in the public schools be discussed as a controversy among scholars. Well, whatever. Well, the debate was going on in Kansas, and we're going to take a look at that a little bit in just a minute, over the teaching of intelligent design in the public school classrooms. He is quoted as saying, quote, "what educators in Kansas and elsewhere should be doing is to teach the controversy," end of quote. Well, following Phillips's lead, other Discovery Institute members such as Stephen C. Meyer, David K. DeWolf, Mark DeForest, and others, they published an article in 1999 called "Teaching the Controversy," subtitled "Darwinism, Design, and the Public School Science Curriculum," published by the Foundation for Thought and Ethics, which also publishes the controversial pro-intelligent design biology textbook that I mentioned on a couple of occasions in other programs mm-hmm. of this series, Pandas and People, which has been proposed as an alternative to mainstream science and biology textbooks.
What do critics say about teaching the controversy from the intelligent design people?
The American Association for the Advancement of Science, which is one of the leading scientific organizations in this country, and other science and professional education organizations, such as the National Science Teachers Association, claim that those who promote teach the controversy are trying to undermine the teaching of evolution and promoting intelligent design, which introduces creationist explanations for the origin of life in public school science curricula, which is a violation, they claim, of the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment to the United States Constitution, which reads, and we'll repeat this again, quote, "Congress shall not make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof." Sometimes this is called the separation of religion and the state, or the church and state clause of the Constitution. Well, this criticism was supported by the ruling in the Kitzmiller versus Dover Area School District case that we discussed in an earlier session. In this case, the judge ruled that hearing testimony and evidence from both sides that, I want to quote from the judge here, quote, "ID cannot uncouple itself from its creationist and thus religious antecedents. And it is an interesting theological argument, but that is not science," end of quote. And as proof, the judge said that evidence presented comparing the drafts of the intelligent design textbook of Pandas and People, which we mentioned on several occasions, before and after the 1987 Edwards versus Aguilar ruling, shows that the definition given in the book for creation science in pre-Edwards drafts is identical to the definition of intelligent design in post-Edwards copies, and that the word creation, creationism, and creationist, which appeared approximately 150 times, I'm quoting here now, were deliberately and systematically replaced with the phrase intelligent design shortly after the Supreme Court ruled in Edwards that creation science is religious and cannot be taught in public school science classes, end of quote.
Okay, so the courts have been pretty clear about teaching intelligent design. Does this mean that the intelligent design movement has run out of options?
No, I don't think they're through yet. The failure of the wedge and teach the controversy strategy led proponents of intelligent design to shift their strategy once again. Their fallback strategy is called teaching the critical analysis of evolution. And this strategy involves teaching all the intelligent design arguments without using the name, without using, you know, the intelligent design name. I have read that this strategy continues the themes of teach the controversy strategy, emphasizing what they say are the criticisms of evolutionary theory and arguments against evolution, which continues to be portrayed as a theory in crisis. I understand that the new strategy simply involves repackaging learning materials with different keywords to make them appear more acceptable, thus hopefully passing the scrutiny of the courts.
Okay, so we have to give them credit for keeping trying. They keep trying. Has intelligent design proponents or proposals had any success with its most recent campaign, Critical Analysis of Evolution?
Well, at least it has influenced the President of the United States. On August the 1st, 2005, President Bush said in an interview with reporters from five Texas newspapers that he believes schools should discuss intelligent design alongside evolution when teaching students about the origin of life. He didn't go into his own views on the subject, but he advocated the teach the controversy approach. He is quoted as saying, quote, "I think that part of education is to expose people to different schools of thought. You're asking me whether or not people ought to be exposed to different ideas? The answer is yes," end of quote.
Okay, so he really came down on the side of teach the controversy.
Which is not surprising, of course.
Okay.
If you look at, you know, a good part of his constituency, a lot of times that they call the right, and which it does include a lot of evangelical Protestants and fundamentals, and, I think probably the majority of Catholics probably would agree with that as well. I hope so, anyway.
do I have any problem with teaching the controversy?
I would rather wait until we get ready to tie that up at the end so we can get all the various strands and
all right.
Kind of tie them together.
Well, what about the recent history of the debate teaching intelligent design in the public schools, because that's where the rubber hits the road. That's where the controversy has been so intense, whether it should or could be taught in public schools.
Well, the story of the modern debate goes back to the so-called Scopes Monkey Trial in 1925 concerning enforcement of a Tennessee statute that prohibited teaching the theory of evolution in public school classrooms. The courtroom drama in Dayton, Tennessee featured Clarence Darrow, who was one of the lawyers, dealing with the three-time presidential candidate William Jennings Bryan. He was also, of course, a noted lawyer. This trial was portrayed in a 1955 Broadway play by Jerome Lawrence and Robert Edwin Lee, entitled Inherit the Wind, very famous story, and a 1960 movie, Hollywood movie, based on the play. The play's title comes from Proverbs 11:29, which from the Protestant King James Version reads, "He that troubleth his own house shall inherit the wind, and the fool shall be servant to the wise of heart," end of quote. Even though the trial was very entertaining, this is the movie, of course, it was very entertaining, mm-hmm. It didn't resolve the question of whether the First Amendment permitted states to ban teaching a theory that contradicted religious beliefs.
So that's never been ruled on.
Well, not until 1968 did the Supreme Court rule in Esperson versus Arkansas.
Okay.
The banning teaching of the theory of evolution violates the Establishment Clause, which its primary purpose is religious. In other words, many of the states had passed laws banning the teaching of evolution in the schools.
But it was not upheld by the Supreme Court.
In this Epperson case in 1968, it declared that was unconstitutional to do that. The court used the same reasoning in the 1987 Edwards versus Aguillard case, which we mentioned at least three or four times, when it struck down a Louisiana law that required biology teachers who taught the theory of evolution to also discuss evidence supporting the theory called creation science. Well, the debate has heated up a lot in this country over the past several years, including in the state of Kansas, Ohio, Virginia, and others. Georgia, I think, if I recall right. Even Indiana, I think, to some extent.
Pennsylvania?
Certainly Pennsylvania. Trying to require that intelligent design be taught in the public schools, equally with the scientific evolutionary hypothesis. The proponents claim that intelligent design is a powerfully logical and scientific explanation for the creation of the universe and all that is in it. And on the other hand, the opponents of such a policy claim that it's just another version of creation science, which they say is nothing more than a religious explanation for the existence of the universe and what it contains. They argue that teaching intelligent design in the classroom violates the separation of church and state, and this derives from the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, which we'll quote for a third time in our series, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof.
All right, Ron, since we're coming down to the end of our time limit, can you give us a brief history of the most recent intelligent design movement?
As we pointed out in the earlier session, the Discovery Institute had been behind much of the organized intelligent design movement in this country. For example, in 2000, the leading intelligent design proponents conducted a briefing in Washington, D.C. to promote intelligent design to members of Congress, and as a result, Senator Rick Santorum of Pennsylvania introduced a pro-intelligent design amendment into the No Child Left Behind bill, calling for students to be taught why evolution generates so much continuing pressure or controversy. This Teach the Controversy came to be known as the Santorum Amendment. You know, he's the darling of a lot of conservatives, Senator Santorum. Very pro-life, I might add.
Extremely pro-life.
Mm-hmm.
And pro-marriage.
Although it passed the Senate, the amendment was left out of the final version of the act. That is, in other words, the No Child Left Behind passed, but his amendment did not pass with it. And it actually became what's called a conference report, which was tacked on to it, but it wasn't a part of the law, so it carries no force.
Okay.
And I read that the Discovery Institute publicizes the wording of the conference report as model language for bills and curricula.
Okay, aside from Congress, has the Discovery Institute had any success in getting legislation passed or curriculum changed, made in any of the states?
Well, it's had some success. For example, in 2002, the Discovery Institute proposed a model intelligent design-oriented lesson plan called Critical Analysis of Evolution for Science Curriculum to the Ohio Board of Education. And according to the Discovery Institute, the lesson plan does not discuss religion and explicitly says it does not include intelligent design. It simply is an application of teaching the controversy. And as a result, the board adopted part of the proposal. And we're running out of time, so I don't have time to get into that. But it went kind of back and forth, and I think finally the board members get new board, and then I think it's been tossed out, I think.
Yeah, I think you mentioned that.
Yes.
It was approved and then was tossed out with a new election of the board members.
And one other area, it's gotten to be a big issue in Kansas, and it was in the newspapers almost every day back about a couple of years ago, for a couple of years before that, and that's gone back and forth, and it had to do with school boards being, one group had come in and then another group had come in and it'd go back and forth, and I'm not exactly sure exactly where things stand in Kansas right now in regard to that.
Okay, well, we'll have to conclude with that, Ron. To our audience, may God bless you always and in all ways.